nice warm bed. You just remember what your old past said. Boy, you got a friend in me. Yeah, you got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. You got trouble, and I got them too. There isn't anything I wouldn't do for you. We stick together, see it through, 'cause you've got a friend in me. You got a friend in me.
And welcome to the Community Living Show here on CFRO 100.5 and live here on the NCRA networks. This is our half hour show. And today, you're stuck with me, Michael, solo. Kelly is off working on a separate project. It's doing what Kelly usually does. He usually finds some way to help somebody or help the effort to get awareness about people's needs. So that's what Kelly's off doing. So today. So a few, I'm going to do a repeat from one of our 1 hour shows. So you're only going to get a clip of this, but it's a pretty important clip about influencing people. And I interviewed the influence expert, Teresa de Graba, and about her book also about causing mass influence with people. And I will find her link again, and I'll put it up again on Facebook since I'm replaying her her interview with me again. But it's pretty interesting stuff, and it's pretty important stuff because influence is how we get any cause started. It's how we get people knowing that that there's a problem, an awareness to a problem, or awareness to something that's really wonderful is happening in the world, right? So I'm going to play this clip about how to influence people and what it means to actually give and take influence. So here we go. All right. My interview from a few months ago with Teresa de Graba. And welcome to the Community Living Radio on the NCRA networks. And we're here today with Teresa de Graba. And Teresa teaches business and marketing courses and heads an international evolutionary business council. That's tough to say. She works with speakers, influencers dedicated to teaching principles of success. Teresa believes it is possible to create a massive positive change in the thinking of our planet, one word of mouth epidemic at a time. I have to agree with you on the one word of mouth epidemic. That's pretty awesome. That's quite the undertaking that you have going on with that. So with that mouthful, is there anything else you want to add to that, Teresa? And welcome to the show.
Just that it's great to be here, Michael. Thank you for having me on your show.
It's a pleasure to have somebody who wants to inspire people the way that you actually do.
Thank you.
So you've also often been described as someone who teaches thought leaders and emerging thought leaders to a greater impact on the world. So tell me how you got to that.
Oh, I love that question. You know, like a lot of people, it was a bit messy, is what I want to say. You know, I had what I would now affectionately call a really bad year about 12, 13 years ago. And, you know, in the first 6 months of that year, I had, my marriage had ended, my father had passed away, my business had failed, and my health was in a spiral. And I actually, you know, remember at the time, the only thing I was really, really clear on was how incredibly unhappy I was. And in fact, if I look back over the, you know, preceding 25 years of my life, I couldn't actually look back at a time and say that I could point to that I was really on fire happy. You know, I had had all the outward trappings of success, great job, six-figure income, beautiful house, nice car. But it just, what, you know, my life wasn't really lighting me up, you know. And I actually remember there was a moment when I'm sitting on the bathroom floor of my post-marriage breakup new condo, you know, and I'm surrounded by tools because I've always been a renovator and this bathroom's going to be my latest project. And there's literally tears streaming down my face because, you know, the only thought in my head is that it's me that needs renovating. It's me. And it was one of those amazing moments because I made the commitment right then, right there, I'm going to be my next project. And I started doing every self-help course under the sun. I went back and did a whole certificate in mediation because I've always been a conflict avoider. Mm-hmm. And I just started leaning in to changing my life until I really figured out what really does light me up is actually teaching what I'm really good at, go figure, and helping others that would change the world become more influential.
Wow. So how long did it take you to actually get around all that, especially knowing that you got to renovate yourself or coming to the realization that you need to renovate yourself?
You know, I love that because a lot of people think it's, you know, poof and it's done. and although life can be magic, it's, you know, the magic isn't always instantaneous, you know. And I, you know, at the time, you know, I had been introduced to the whole concept that a lot of transformational leaders talk about, which is like lean in. You know, Janet Atwood talks about this in her book, The Passion Test, just lean in the direction of things you love. So when I first really stepped into the realm of, you know, and now for something completely different, I decided that I was going to create a charity to build schools in Africa. I was going to take my hobby of writing children's books and publish three of them to raise money for the charity. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing that happened when I did that was, you know, I really quickly learned two things. The first was that I didn't really like being a children's author. Go figure, right? And the second was that, you know, I had people coming at me in droves saying, three bestsellers in 8 months. Holy cow, Teresa, how did you do that? And I ended up, you know, I started mentoring all these people and, you know, how do you get more influence and more reach? You know, until one day I had, you know, my very dear friend, who's actually now my best friend, Shawn DePerrin, she's also an international level speaker. You know, she was sitting having tea with me one day and she said, you know, Teresa, you know that fish don't know what water is. And I'm thinking, yeah, okay, I get that cliche. You know, a lot of us don't get what we're really good at and what's all around us. She says, the universe is sending you a flood of people who want your help. Don't you think you should pay attention to that? And it was like a light bulb moment because it was like, here was the business that I should be creating, teaching people who want to do good work in the world how to become more influential. Mm-hmm. And it was so intuitive and so natural and normal to me that I, you know, like fish don't get the water is, I wasn't seeing where my gifts lay. And when I shifted and rebranded overnight, all of a sudden, you know, my life really lit on fire and my business just took off and I've never looked back.
So your success was like a light bulb coming on?
A little bit, yeah. And, yeah, you know, success is sloppy, you know. And I think one of the most important things anyone can learn in life is to give yourself permission to succeed sloppily. You know, if we wait till everything lines up all neat and perfect and looks pretty with a bow tied on top of it, we'll never really do anything. And in fact, it's in those getting messy moments and trying stuff, even though it might fail or even though it might be a little awkward in how you bring it forward, mm-hmm. it's those moments that are actually the really joyful, wonderful, amazing moments of life.
Well, don't you have time after you know, you realize what it is that you have, what the talents are, and how the talents can be used to help bring value to the world? Can't you clean it up after you discovered it?
Exactly.
even after all the mess?
You know, you want to build a house, there's going to be a little sawdust involved, right?
Exactly.
But that doesn't mean that there isn't going to be a mansion at the end of that process, right? And so, you know, I just think so many of us are hardwired to resist stuff until we feel really ready to do it, or until we feel, you know, the world is waiting. Really, truthfully, the number one thing that stops most people from becoming more influential is their inner dialogue, that they're not worthy, they're not ready, they're not smart enough, they're not influential enough, they don't have enough credentials. Inner dialogue will trip you up every time. And, you know, transformational leaders all over the world are talking about this. I know you talk about this on your show a lot, Michael.
Yes.
And often what's stopping you from really making a difference and being of service in the world is that inner dialogue that you're hardwired with. That's one of the reasons I wrote my book, was because I wanted good people to see that sometimes you're your own worst enemy, and you could be of much higher service to the world if you would just stop listening to all your negative inner dialogue.
So when you talk about your book, you mean the one that's coming out October 1st? Mass Influence?
Mass Influence, The Habits of the Highly Influential.
Tell us a little bit about the book.
Well, you know, I really wrote this book because I see so many good people who really want to do wonderful, positive things in the world get tripped up the minute that they try and increase their own influence, you know. And when you look at highly influential people, it really is a lot like a game, you know. It's really a skill set, a set of habits that you can learn that will really serve you. But the challenge is that most of us have, you know, well, we have two things that stop us from becoming more influential. The first thing that stops us is we all learned an etiquette or a rule book in kindergarten about fairness and, you know, I do this for you, you do that for me. And, you know, we learned a similar rule book when we first started networking in business. You know, you're my colleague. I want to do business with you. Therefore, I would offer to buy you a coffee, for example. And, right. You know, we all know intuitively, you know, that if you met Oprah Winfrey and offered to buy her a coffee, her gatekeepers would get in the way faster than you could say restraining order, right? And yet most of us don't get where that rule book changed. The highly influential operate with a different set of habits and etiquette in their life. And so that's the first thing that stops a lot of good people from gaining more influence. The second thing is that a lot of us are really hardwired with a lot of negative self-talk that really gets in our way of stepping into the influence game.
Yeah, that is true. A lot of people are, just our society in general is like, they are them and we are us. And there's like a railroad track that you can't cross, right?
Yeah, that's a great analogy, because it's, you know, a lot of people really do think that way. And, you know, the reality is when good people stop themselves from seeking influence because they've got all this inner dialogue going on, you know, the only people who aren't hardwired with inner dialogue that stops them from wanting to seek influence is sociopaths. You know, sociopaths are often hardwired to want more influence. And, you know, that's not the world I want my grandkids to grow up in. I don't want my grandkids growing up in a world run by sociopaths. I want good people with strong values who really believe in changing the world for the good to be seeking influence and having the ability to create that change, because really that's the world we all want to live in.
Right. So is that the basic why to creating a book about this topic?
You know, I think it was one of my most fundamental whys, you know, because a lot of people don't realize how much they can step into thought leadership, you know, and I mean, you know, a lot of people are batting around this term thought leadership, but, you know, if you're pushing out new ideas and new thinking or wanting to initiate change in some way, then you are in the realm of thought leadership, right? And And that, it can be a scary place to be, because the minute that you're leading, nobody else tells you the way to go, right? You're the one that's got to make it up and figure it out. And, you know, so thought leaders, and, you know, most business owners fall into this realm, but a lot of people in business do as well. You know, you might just wanting to be creating positive change in your organization or your community, or maybe you run a not-for-profit. And if you are not feeling that you have the right to step forward and create positive change, if you're feeling no one will take you seriously, if you're feeling you don't have enough credentials, if you're, you know, any form of inner dialogue. And, you know, the great irony is we all invented it when we were very young. You know, I can, you know, there's a lot of research in the psychology and sociology literature on this, right? Most people invent their dominant inner dialogue when they're like 2-3 years old, first getting language. And, you know, it's those first few failures you had in life, right? Mm-hmm. I can actually remember the day I first invented my inner dialogue. And you know, and really clear how it trips me up now as an adult.
Well, because I run into this all the time, where that first inner dialogue wasn't necessarily from within; it was something that was handed to you.
Oh yeah, exactly.
Was yours handed to you, or did you discover it on your own?
Well, you know, it's interesting because it's sort of like it's handed to you, and then at the same time, it's what did you make that mean, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, like what you wouldn't know about me if you didn't ask is, you know, I'm from the Canadian equivalent of the backwoods, right? Like I, you know, I'm not only Canadian, but I grew up in the north, right? And, you know, my family used to spend their summers in a remote backwoods cabin. We'd, you know, we'd go in every year just in time to see the little baby mosquitoes hatching. And, you know, and so one fall we're back from the cabin and, you know, I'm the youngest of nine, so all my eight siblings are sitting around the kitchen in our tiny little, you know, we have a 100-year-old house, and all my cousins are visiting, and everybody's buzzing with excitement because my grandmother's taken us all to the movies, which is a big freaking deal because, well, first of all, it's the love bug, so that's a pretty big deal right there. And, you know, secondly, we never go to the movies. It's just way too much hassle for a family our size. And I look across the room just in time to hear my mother say, "Teresa can't go. She's too little." And so I make that mean I'm too small to play with the big kids. And that inner dialogue sticks. So I, you know, as of that point, I start spending all my time doing one of two things, either desperately trying to prove that I'm not too small to play with the big kids, or terrified that I am. Now, do you think that might get in the way as an international speaker who's got to step out on a stage in front of 500 or 1,000 people, right? And the reality is, though, that, you know, your inner dialogue is neither good nor bad. It just motivates you, right? Mm-hmm. It can trip you up, but it also can motivate you to do some really cool things in life. I'm too small to play with the big kids actually motivated me to become an expert on influence that wants to.
Every Friday night at 8 p.m., lay your burden down and get on board the gospel train. Music, interviews, live guests, local performance information. All aboard the gospel train, Fridays at 8 p.m.
Okay, we're going to get back to Teresa, and thank you for listening to Community Living Radio.
And playing a bigger game in life. Maybe you change something within your organization, or maybe you set up that not-for-profit organization you've always been thinking about. What's that inner dialogue that confronts you? And start journaling about that, because that was invented by a very young version of you. And when you can really start to see where that hinders you, but also where it helps you, then you can come to peace with that inner dialogue and have it stop running the show. It then just becomes, you know, a messaging that runs in the background, but you don't need to actually engage in it or be motivated by it anymore.
So the topic of the book, Why do you think that this particular topic is so important now?
Oh, I love that question. Well, and I know I'm preaching to the converted when I talk to the, you know, people and that are listening on your show, but you know, I really do believe that we're living at a point in history that we will look back on as the most significant shift in humanity that mankind has ever seen, which is we are in the era right now where people are waking up and they're realizing that they can control their own lives, they can control their own destiny by learning to notice and control their own thoughts. How cool is that? Right? And when we get that very simple skill to notice how we think, notice what we make things mean, and not let our thoughts run the show, but we start running our thoughts instead of our thoughts start running us, then all of a sudden, the world around us changes. We have the opportunity to pursue the life of our dreams. We have the opportunity to go after promotions or bigger opportunities or, you know, actually create positive change in the world. And so, you know, for me, this book is just one contribution, a small but important one, to really helping that shift happen on this planet, because this book invests in the average grassroots person who wants to create some positive change around them so that they really get how simple and easy it can be. And, you know, by easy, I don't mean it wouldn't take work, but just like fish don't get what water is, most people don't get that influence is all around us. Learning to be influential really is as simple as riding a bike or as simple as learning to breathe. Once you get the basic habits of it, it really does become something that you will start to look at and wonder how you ever thought it was hard.
Yeah. And being an influencer does have it has a lot of its own moments because it creates so much abundance around you, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, influence, you know, there's just one fundamental principle to influence, and it's so easy that people laugh when I tell them, you know, and if you don't mind, I'll just give it to you.
Yeah.
It's, you know, just like we got to give respect to get respect, you got to give influence to get influence. And a lot of people kind of go, huh, what the heck does that mean? Right? But when you become someone who habitually starts giving influence to other people, and that's, you know, one of the most major habits of influential people that you'll see, is, you know, influence starts flowing back to you, right? You know, consider the scenario that if I was at a networking function and I stood up on a chair and said, look at me, I'm so great, I'm a four-time best-selling author, I speak all over the world, I even like pie, you know, people would be rolling their eyes back in their head and going, get that crazy Canadian out of here, you know? And at the same time, if I stood up on a chair and said, oh, everybody, Michael Rubin just came in the room. He has this awesome radio show and he's, you know, really a cause for positive change in the world. He, you know, shines a light on all these really cool people and highlights them on his show. And, you know, all of a sudden in that scenario, I'm gracious and you're more influential. And the interesting thing is in that act of giving influence, you know, I become more influential. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, it's got to be authentic.
Yeah.
You know, because I can hear your listeners saying, you know, but what if you really don't like the person? Well, if you really don't like the person, don't say anything. But, you know, if you routinely go around and gift influence to people who in your mind deserve it, you know, like Michael, I would come on your show any day of the week. I love the work you do.
Thank you.
You know, it's very grassroots and it's, you know, it really does celebrate awesome people who are doing cool things in the world. You know, so for me, you know, I would clear my schedule to come on this show because I so love what you do. But, you know, there are interviews I turn down in a month just because I don't resonate with who the host is and what they're doing. And I want to be able to authentically be on their show and have fun with them and enjoy it, right? You know, so the first thing to understand around giving influence to get influence is that you always do it in alignment with who you are and what you believe. you never seek to build relationship or give influence to someone you don't authentically love and admire.
Yeah. There's one thing that, I try to get through with a lot of people that is the idea of, when you said alignment and values and things like that, is getting people to understand what it is that they believe so that they align themselves with other people that have that belief, so that everything is in alignment, and that's when things really start to light up, is when everybody's authentic around each other, and you kept bringing that authenticity up. So it becomes really important. Can you explain a little bit more why authenticity, okay, we'll try that again, authenticity is so important?
Yeah, you know, and I love how you talk about this, Michael, because I couldn't agree more. Authenticity is becoming such a common buzzword these days. Everybody's talking about it, and there's a lot of different definitions out there of it. Well, here's my definition. Authenticity is your inside voice saying the same thing as your outer voice, right? So, you know, if inwardly you're saying, oh God, I really need this sale, and outwardly you're saying, this is a really great product, you should buy it, you know, we all know that that lands smarmy, right? And at the same time, when you're meeting influential people, you know, you can tell when someone runs up to an influential person and says, here's a copy of my book, I'd love for you to have it, when really what their inside is saying is, I really want you to endorse this. There's an inauthenticity there, right? Mm-hmm. And so inside playing the influence game, you got to really get noticing where your inside voice is saying something different than your outside voice. Because just like you can tell when other people aren't in alignment, they can tell when you're not, right?
Right.
And influence, or being in influential situations, connecting with influential people, has a tendency to make us nervous. You know, it presses those buttons where we get a little bit in our heads, worrying about how we're coming across, or, you know, or maybe we've had that networking course that, you know, get out there and ask, always be closing, right? Maybe we've got that running in the back of our heads. And so people show up and do a lot of weird things when they meet influential people. And it creates an issue for authenticity. So,
well, that's about all we have time for of the interview today. And again, later on, we will actually post Teresa's link for her book again. It's an important book to go out there and get. So right now, I'm going to leave you guys. And if you're listening to here in Vancouver on CFRO 100.5 FM Co-op Radio, Newt Dedoon will be coming up soon with the A-Train. And I'm going to leave you now with Karina Keeling, a good friend of ours here on Co-op Radio, playing Ohio with a CSNNY song. It's just a studio cover of the song. Okay? Thank you.
So, on May the 4th, in 1970, a group of college students were protesting the Vietnam War. And the Ohio National Guard opened fire, and four of them were